This is
the
Second Story
Podcast.
Welcome back to the Second Story Podcast. I'm Max Spitz. According to Wikipedia, the term bromance originates from a skateboard magazine from the mid-90s, though it didn't gain popularity till around 2005. As a man with some extremely close male friends who I love very much, I'm disappointed that our culture has set what is considered masculine in opposition to expressions of emotion and care. So much so that we felt the need to invent a gendered term for male friendships so that men wouldn't feel unmanly. That said, as this week's story illustrates, even those who feel threatened by expressing their feelings out loud might show up for you in their own ways. Recorded live at Haymarket Pub and Brewery in Chicago in September 2023, Second Story is proud to present Bear Hunt.
For 30 years, I've had a best friend named Jim, who I love, which shouldn't be a problem, but it is, because he believes expressing any feelings whatsoever makes you a complete wuss. Jim is so uncomfortable with his feelings that when I was getting married, I had to give him a note that read, "Dear Jim, would you please be in my wedding? If so, check this box." And even with all that, he turned bright red, punched me in the arm, checked the box, and said, "We were never to talk about this dumb fucking moment ever again." What makes things even more awkward is I know he loves me too, because he's always trying to help me. He's just unable to do it without somehow trying to man it up. For example, when my brother was going through chemo, Jim was the first person to donate plasma, but had to tell me I should have some too because it might help me with the ladies. Or when I went back to school to get my teaching degree, he offered I live with him to save money. But instead of rent, I just had to make him a chicken pot pie when he clapped his hands. Or when my dad was dying, Jim sat with me at the hospital every day for months. But he was always sure to emphasize, it was only because he wanted to sleep with one of the nurses. Because as much as Jim cares, he's also an alpha male whose love language is asshole. Which is why several years before I asked him to be in my wedding, we were at the Four Moon Tavern having our weekly breakfast for lunch, the word brunch being way too unmanly for him. And at this particular breakfast for lunch, I made the mistake of telling Jim my girlfriend had broken up with me the night before. "Dude, what did you say after she dumped your sorry ass?" "Well, I told her this must have been a hard decision, and I asked if she was okay." Jim closes his eyes and exhales. His way of saying, "I can't believe I'm friends with you," without actually saying, "I can't believe I'm friends with you." And again, it's not that Jim didn't care. It's like, he's just like Spock from Star Trek, you know? Both have feelings, they just suppress them. One with logic, the other with a mixture of testosterone and high blood pressure. And what Jim wanted to say was, "I'm worried about you. I don't think you should be alone, and let me do something to take your mind off this breakup." But because he's angry Mr. Spock, the best he could do was, "Listen, Chewbacca." That was one of his nicknames for me, because at the time, I had a lot more hair. "Listen, Chewbacca, tomorrow I'm going bear hunting and you're coming with me." This was no small gesture. Hunting things that could eat you was sacred to Jim, in the same way that the soil is sacred to the farmer. But despite his kindness, I would rather have a root canal than run around the forest chasing grizzlies with Survivor Man Jim. "Dude, I appreciate this offer so much." "Don't say a fucking word, dude. You're my brother, dude." Thank you for that, dude. You're my brother, too. The thing is, Jewish people are not traditionally bear hunters. I know, but it's perfect because you're on spring break. You can cry in Canada just as easily as your apartment. And you need to learn how to be a real man or you're gonna have a lifetime of jerking it to Skinamax. So later that night, I'm lying in bed, listening to my phone ring and ring and ring. And because it's the 90s, I hear my answering machine pick up and then, come on, sleeping Jewy, time to get going. And he keeps calling and calling, each time a little bit more insistent until he's yelling at me to be ready because he's coming to get me. And 15 minutes later, he's leaning on the horn outside my quiet Wrigleyville walk-up, and now my neighbors are screaming, it's 4:30 in the morning. And then from his ridiculous truck sound system, Scott Wildman, 539 West Brompton, apartment B, your ride is here. Scott Wildman, 773-472-9206. Please come outside. So now I'm running around my apartment, packing a suitcase full of things I think one might bring on a bear killing expedition, including two cases of Diet Coke, because that's all I drink. You are a complete asshole, I say as I get in the truck. You're mad now, dude, but I promise, by the time we get back, you're not even gonna remember your ex-girlfriend. And thus began the worst men's retreat in the history of awful men's retreats. Jim is blasting metal death boy or Guns and Boners or whatever it is real men listen to. And every time a new song comes on, he pounds the steering wheel and shouts, fucking A, dude, now that's what I call music. And he keeps pausing to point out the lyrics have a lesson, and I realize he's actually curated a playlist of empowering heavy metal music. So I just smile, pump my fist, and say, dude. And it was while Jim was explaining how Kiss's Rock and Roll All Night was about living in the moment that I tell him, I have to go to the bathroom. And he's like, we just stopped 30 minutes ago. But the thing is, I've already drank 6 Diet Cokes. So now we have an argument about going on the side of the road, because that's what real men do. But as a teacher, I'm not getting arrested with my junk in my hand. So finally we stop. But when we start driving again, Jim has left all my Diet Coke at the rest stop. So now we basically drive in silence until we get to the Canadian wilderness at 10 o'clock at night. It is complete darkness, and Jim says, here's your tent, and hits me with a bag of wood and metal stakes. And using his testosterone powers, he gets his tent up in like 30 seconds. But since I've never even slept in one and it's pitch black, I tell him, I'm just gonna sleep under the stars. Jim says, dude, gives me the I can't believe I'm friends with you exhale and head shake, puts up my tent, then makes a fire using flint and steel, even though he has a lighter. And we have a meal of beef jerky and Coors Light. And when I suggest a fun post-dinner activity, Jim responds with, dude, not to be a dick, but this is your whole problem. No one makes s'mores on a bear hunting trip. Which leads to an entire presentation of things you don't do when you're a real man. And I must have nodded off during the section on no action figures or display cases, because the next thing I know, he's waking me up because it's murder time. Similar to Dungeons and Dragons, before we start our campaign, we get our armor and weapons. For my bear killing adventure, I got a camouflage ninja suit, which I immediately put on, resulting in Jim screaming that real men don't run around in camo, shouting, can you see me now? Then it was time for weapons. Because Jim is an experienced hunter, he got a compound bow like Daryl on The Walking Dead. Since this was my first time, I got what Jim called a starter rifle, but what I'm pretty sure was a bazooka. His thinking being that if I was charged by a bear, I wouldn't have to worry about aiming. And when I asked about like needing some sort of license for bazooka work, he responded with a lengthy speech about how I need to put my big boy pants on because it was my God-given Second Amendment right as an American to kill myself with a bazooka. And also, we're in Canada, so stop whining because laws don't matter here anyway. And with that, we set off to find a good bear-killing spot. This took way longer than it should have because we were supposed to walk in complete silence, but no matter how hard I tried, I couldn't stop myself from whisper yelling, "Shh, we hunting Gwizwees." And every time I did that, Jim would inform me that I just added another half mile onto our walk because apparently bears can hear Looney Tune references, but not the gasp for oxygen that comes from hiking for miles with 100 pounds of gear on your back. Once we reached an acceptable spot, the next step in becoming a bear killer was the building of the tree fort. Because it's not fair to shoot the bear with your bazooka at ground level. No, 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 you have to kill them from above. So now I'm 50 feet in the air, clinging for dear life with my bazooka strapped to my back and standing on what was basically a large frisbee. But still, I could feel the testosterone throbbing through my genitals because at long last, I'm hunting. And like 15 minutes go by and no bear. So I move to the left, adjust my bazooka, and another 15 minutes go by, still no bear. So I move to the right, kind of squint my eyes in manly fashion, and another 15 minutes go by. So finally I turn to Jim. I'm like, "Dude, where's the friggin' bear? What's fun about this?" And he loses his mind. "This isn't goddamn Bambi. There aren't animals prancing all over for us to kill. Part of hunting is being absolutely quiet, something that seems physically impossible for you, which is a problem because if you don't shut up, I'm gonna leave your ass in the Canadian wilderness." And that's pretty much how the entire week went. Every day, we'd stand on our frisbees until Jim would get irrationally angry at me for absolutely no reason whatsoever. We'd head back to camp for man lessons. Then we'd go to sleep and do the whole thing again. And the entire time, not a single bear, which was somehow my fault. On our fifth day of hunting, we'd been on our frisbees for several hours, and I have to go to the bathroom, which I know will upset Jim, but I'm at the point where I'm gonna wet my ninja suit. So even though I know he's gonna lose his shit, I climb down my tree, walk to where we've hidden our gear, and go all without permission. Afterwards, I decide that if I have to spend the rest of the day in that stupid tree, I need something to help. So I dig into our bags, grab a few items, then head back to my tree fort. And I can tell Jim is furious because he's fixated on the animal-less horizon. And about 5 minutes go by, and that's when I hear, "Dude, what the hell are you doing?" "I'm grading papers." "In your fucking tree stand?" And that's when he notices my ultimate transgression. "Where the fuck is your rifle?" I point to the base of the tree and Jim loses his freaking mind because according to him, not only have I chased away every single animal in the woods with my complete lack of manliness, I've apparently made a scarecrow for bears by sticking my bazooka in the ground and ruining it. And he ends with, "You win, we're going home right now and good luck ever dating a woman again." He literally breaks down his tree fort in 20 seconds and tells me to leave mine because fuck it. And he's sprinting through the forest so fast. It's all I can do not to lose sight of him. And now we're at the camp and he's throwing everything into his truck, ranting about all he wanted to do was help me. And why should he care that I got dumped? And who the fuck grades papers in a goddamn tree stand? And that's when it happens. A brown bear walks right into the middle of our campsite. So I yell, Jim, bear. And Jim looks at the bear and the bear looks at Jim. And to my complete surprise, I watch as Jim, this manly man, this killer of beasts, his eyes roll up into the back of his head as he faints and falls to the ground. So I run to a nearby tree and climb as quickly as I can. And now I'm watching as the bear paws open our cooler and starts eating all the jerky. And now I'm racking my brains for anything at all. And that's when I remember, if you run into a bear, you're supposed to make yourself as tall as possible and make loud noises. So I take a deep breath, jump out of the tree, and scream at the top of my lungs, which was kind of easy because I hurt my ankle when I landed. And I raise my arms over my head, and the bear and I lock eyes, and thus begins a battle of wills between two of nature's fiercest predators, the bear and the Jew. And after what seems like an eternity of incredibly intense staring and screaming, and I'll admit it, wishing for my bazooka, the bear realizes he's met his match, and he just turns and kind of walks into the woods. The bear's gone. Victorious, I walk over to Jim. And I give him a shake, and Jim, the guy who I literally just saved, turns and punches me right in the face. And I'm like, I can't believe you did that, dude, after I just saved you. And he starts ranting that I didn't save him, that when you see a bear, you're supposed to play dead. And the only reason we weren't mauled to death is because the bear was confused because it had never seen anyone that stupid before. And Jim throws all our gear into the back of his truck, and we leave, driving in complete silence for several hours, which was fine by me, because as far as I was concerned, I was done with Jim and his manhood. Or at least, that's what I thought until out of the blue, he pulls into this weird roadside biker bar. So I ask him, what's going on? And he looks at me and says, dude, let's go have a drink. And maybe I'm naive, but I like to think in that moment, Jim realized that whether or not he actually fainted, I did jump out of a tree to charge a bear, and there's probably not too many people in life who will do that for you. And at the same time, I did have to admit that thanks to this shitty men's retreat, I barely thought about my breakup all week. But Jim's manliness and my pride prevented either of us from saying this out loud. And having this drink in the middle of nowhere was probably the best we could do. So I get out of the truck, follow him into the bar, order a shitty beer, play ABBA on the jukebox just to stick it to him one more time. And then we raise our glasses and toast our differences, our manliness, and most importantly, our friendship, all of which, of course, being summed up in the single word, dude.
This story was produced by Casey Truba, curated by Amanda Delheimer, and directed by Elisa Vera Ramos. Music and sound engineering was by Nick Ward. The Second Story podcast is produced by Max Spitz. To be the first to hear about updates and new episodes, sign up for our podcast listserv at 2ndstory.com/podcast or subscribe to the Second Story Podcast on SoundCloud or Apple Podcasts. Second Story is located in the traditional homelands of the Council of the Three Fires, the Odawa, Ojibwe, and Potawatomi Nations. Our programming is made possible by the Arts Work Fund, Walder Foundation, Paul M. Angel Family Foundation, Gaylord and Dorothy Donnelly Foundation, Illinois Arts Council Agency, the Chicago Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events, Innovation 80, the Field Foundation, the Reva and David Logan Foundation, Modern Compassionate Care, Eric Rothstein and Gina Wamick, Athene Karras and Thomas Applegate, James Lupo, Jessica Wetmore, Hannah and George Stowe, and many generous individuals like you. I'm Max Spitz, and this
is
the
Second
Story
Podcast.